I do not think.
So what are you getting at?
Blah, blah, blah.
Do you even listen to yourself when you talk?
Hey, we're live! Woohoo! Turn off your radio before it's too late!
Hated it.
I told you this was a bad idea.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I was laughing my ass off at that team. I was laughing at
them.
Well,
it did take a little while because it seemed like, at different points, it was like, how many times have I seen this movie this year? They're coming back again after being down like 21 points. You MFers, go away. But no, they blew it. And really, the one that really makes me laugh, and I heard that sound and immediately thought about it. I don't trust my players after we just scored. Let's kick the stupidest onside kick in history with two timeouts left. What the hell are you thinking?
2:18, two timeouts left. Simple as pie. kick it down to the goal line. They run a play. Timeout. Now there's 2:10 left, to be kind. They run a play. Call timeout. Now there's 2:02 left. Then they run third down, stop them on third. Clock stops at the two-minute warning. You get the ball back with the timeout still in your pocket. It's the easiest calculus you can. I mean, it doesn't get any easier than that.
I mean, because either way, you're faced with the same thing. You got to stop them. So you're either going to give them a field goal or not give them a field goal.
I mean, it's the dumbest thing ever.
Oh, it's colossally stupid.
And even you want to dial it back, they burned a timeout on offense for no reason. The drive before,
right?
I think it was after a Roethlisberger scramble for like 12 yards, a good gain, and they called timeout. They have the ball. No reason to call timeout. None. 0-0-0-0. They weren't up against the play clock. Nothing. They just called timeout. So
I love the urgency too in the final seconds. You know, they didn't even have the sense that because they quit. Frankly, they up and up quit. Kick the field goal. Try the onside kick. Get the ball back. You need two scores, you jackasses. Getting a touchdown on the final play of the game doesn't do you any good.
But embarrassing.
The onside kick itself. What a mess. Did it look like they ever practiced that play? Because it didn't to me.
Carol in the car. Go ahead, Carol.
That interview makes me laugh every single time. And when you showed it on Sports Sunday last night, I mean, the visual of Tomlin, his eyes were like popping out of his head. He's so excited, talking about the second game that the idiot never even got to. But that's not what I call. So I wanted to talk about one play, and I didn't see it because I was in the car yesterday, but I had it on the radio. I think it was towards the end of the first half. The announcers are saying how Jacksonville was confused on defense, and Roethlisberger took his time and didn't do a quick snap and run a play. They only had 10 guys on the field.
Okay,
how did he not know that? How did he not see that? Brady would never let that happen.
Oh, there's a million of them. A million examples like that. A million. The one, again, that stood out to me is before they scored a touchdown on 4th-and-11 at the end of the second quarter. They took 30 seconds go off the clock without trying to figure out whether we kick it or whether we call a play and what do we call. And finally, they said, screw it, time out. Because they couldn't get their act together. And then, of course, they just luckily throw a touchdown. But just over and over and over again. But again, I go back to they just weren't ready to play. And they had themselves in the AFC title game back in November. And they can't get past Jacksonville at home in the divisional round. So typical of them.
I mean, that coaching staff is inept. Really, they're inept. That team right there, all they are is a collection of talent. That's it. That's all they are is a collection of talent.
We've got Joe in West Roxbury. Joe, what do you got?
Hey, guys. How's it going? So, Tomlin, he's got to go for the Steelers. I mean, how do you make those fourth down calls and give Blake Bortles short field? You know, all you have to do is put him at the 10, the 20. You can put him at the 30, and he's not going to drive up. He doesn't have the mental toughness to drive up, even against a bad Pittsburgh defense that's just giving up throws left and right. But the one good thing that came out of the game this weekend is I have a new screensaver for my phone of the defeated, just totally dead inside look on Mike Tomlin's face after that second fourth down miss with frozen snot on his beard.
I was going to say, do you have the spittle? The spittle in his beard, just standing there dumbfounded? But it goes beyond Tomlin. And this one, it's because they were the exact same kind of team under Cowher. Exact. And they won. Look, they won. It's not like they've never won anything. They won one with Cowher. They won one with Tomlin. They won to another one with Tomlin. So it's not like they're in open. They're not the Jets. But this has been going on for 30 years there, Maz. The 92 divisional round at home to the Bills. Loss. 94 AFC title game at home to San Diego. Loss. Embarrassing defeat. 97 AFC title game at home to Denver. Loss. 0-1 title game against you. Loss. 0-4 title game. Now, they were favored in all these other games. The 0-4 one, I think they were underdogs to the Patriots, slight underdogs at home. Either way, 07 wild card at home to Jacksonville, to Jack Del Rio, David Garrard, and the Jacksonville Jaguars in 07. That's why you got the Jaguars in that divisional round, because Pittsburgh puked on themselves at home. Does this sound familiar? This has been going on for a long time there. Yap, 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 yap. A lot of hype on that team, and they can't live up to it. They can't keep their eye on the ball.
See, I don't think it's the yapping, though. Like, again, it's the coaching.
It's symptomatic. You don't think that they looked past that Jaguars team yesterday?
They did, but again, to me, but I also think their approach in the game was horrendous. Baltimore yapped, the Jets yapped, but they came in here and won. Like, to me, it's not the yapping. It's the coaching.
It's symptomatic of a team that doesn't get it. And ultimately, the Jets didn't get it. As much as I loved them and I wanted them to get it, they didn't get it. I mean, you're not going to put the Jets up there as a model after we know that they're not.
I think the coaching staff on Pittsburgh sucks. I think it sucks. I think the coordinators suck. I think the head coach sucks.
But I'm telling you, in Pittsburgh, it's deeper than that. It's deeper than that. They let the players run the show. They let the players run their mouths. They let the players do what players are going to do, which is get unfocused and look ahead and get overconfident. And that's just what, you know, young, cocky athletes are going to do. You've got to have a structure to keep them on the tracks, and they never do there in Pittsburgh. They never do.
Right, coaching.
But it's beyond that, because the previous coach did the exact same thing, and if they keep the same sort of approach overall, the next guy will do the exact same
thing. I mean, they want loud, aggressive guys. They want that. And they've won with that in the past. I'm just telling you that the way their approach in that game yesterday was unbelievably stupid.
Pat in Upton. Go ahead, Pat.
Yeah, so first off, props to the Vikings for winning a great game, one of the best in recent playoff history, but can you at least pretend like you've been there before? You got guys crying during post-game interviews. You got the captain pretending like he won the Powerball. I mean, this is my point. All the teams that are left right now are just happy to be there. They're happy in the position they are, and that's about it. So if the Patriots don't win now, it's going to be pretty sad.
Okay, Pat, the league is sad. The league is sad. And all the victories that happened over the weekend, other than yours, to me, say more about the opponent than the team who won. I mean, you're Atlanta with all that talent. Look at all that talent on the Falcons. I mean, just bursting at the seams with offensive talent.
And defensive talent.
But particularly on offense, you score 10 points.
10
You know, their defense at least held Philly to 15.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. So the defense, you could say, did their job. The offense, with all that talent, 10 points, and they were gifted 7 on a special teams turnover, right? I believe there was a fumbled punt that gave them their first 7 points. So that loss is on Atlanta because they just can't figure it out with all that talent. Then you've got New Orleans that's sitting there up 2 points with the opponent on their 39-yard line with 10 seconds left and no timeouts. Now, I'm a moron, and my football experience went through my senior year in high school. So I don't know jack about jack, but I do know when you're up by 2 points with 10 seconds left and the opponent has no timeouts on their own 39-yard line,
just tackle them inbounds.
There's only one thing you need to do.
Keep your head up, too.
And that is not allow a touchdown. That's all. That's basically all.
And now, keep them inbounds.
Now, ideally, you're not letting them score a touchdown and you're keeping them inbounds, which shouldn't be that hard considering they're on their 39-yard line.
Just keep them in bounds.
And they can't do it. And then you have Pittsburgh yesterday, who, again, bursting at the seams with talent. Bursting. Just talent everywhere, offensively anyway. And 2 weeks to prepare against a bum of an opponent, and they give up 45 points and lose. It's the games over the weekend are on New Orleans, Atlanta, and Pittsburgh, not those other teams that won. And it shows you, just again, I go back to coaching. It just, no one can keep it together despite the talent. Talent's not the issue on those teams. Talent's not the issue in this league. It's about mindset and coaching and the program, and no one else had them. No one has one other than you. No one. No one. There is not another legit program in the league. Honestly, name another legit program in the league.
Well, I mean, if you're talking over a length of time, there isn't one. I think Minnesota's got a little bit of a structure there.
Let's see them do it.
Okay, listen, I agree. I think they got a quarterback problem, but I think they get a little bit of a structure in Minnesota.
I thought Seattle had a program, but that lasted like 3 years.
I used to respect Sean Payton. Did you see the timeouts he was wasting? Oh, really,
on those challenges?
Oh, he's an, God, he's
dude,
an
what
idiot.
Are you doing?
There's only one program in the league. There's only one. There's only one.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. No one says it like they do. Like they do.
So my question to the people of Boston is, what are you nuts?
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
10 seconds to go. 24-23 Saints. Vikings at their own 39. It's third down. Three receivers right, Thielen left. Marshawn Lattimore, 12 yards from Adam. Case on a deep drop. Steps up in the pocket. He'll fire to the right side. Caught by Diggs.
Stay
up!
Oh, he got loose!
Oh, my God!
30!
No! 10!
Touchdown!
Are you kidding me?
Miracle finish!
It's a Minneapolis miracle!
Way!
Stephon Diggs and the Minnesota Vikings have walked off on the New Orleans Saints. It's a 61-yard Minneapolis miracle.
Look at the Vikings
so
coaches.
This is just
right
an absolute
mistake.
Yes!
Are you kidding me?
Look at these Vikings coaches. Yes! Let's go to Philadelphia.
Paul, when it's your year, it's your year. That's all I got
to
say. Stephon Diggs, what an unbelievable play.
It's going to be 48 and drizzly, and we're bringing a purple rain.
That was unbelievable, that play. What a jackass that guy in New Orleans is. What's his name? Like Marcus?
Williams.
Marcus Williams?
Doesn't matter. Rookie safety.
What a donkey.
I mean, he made the pick that really turned the game around earlier in the game.
That was a balloon.
Just
this is a fair catch.
Just make the tackle, you clown. You clown. You give up a 61-yard touchdown pass on that play to blow your chance at the NFC Championship game?
Third and 10, 10 seconds left, opponent's 39-yard line.
What was he doing?
Just get line up all 11 guys on the other 30 and just tackle them in bounds. You don't have to do anything other than that. There's nothing else you need to do.
I mean, I'm still trying to figure out what he was trying to do on that play. Like, if you're going to go low, at least hit him.
Well, did you hear Jimmy Johnson after the game? He was convinced that the coaches told him, you know, they called the timeout, the Saints, that they had the one left. He's convinced the coaches got in his head and said, just don't interfere. You know, just don't get any kind of penalty. I'm convinced the same kind of thing. They got in his head, and that's why he went low or he tried to go for the big hit. It makes no sense.
Jimmy, what did it sound like in New Orleans? Do we have the New Orleans call?
Here's Keenan, dropping, looking, throwing near sideline, and it's caught by Stephon Diggs. He's going to take it inside the 15, 10, 5, touchdown on the final play of this game. Are you kidding me?
Are you kidding me? He could have came up and just tackled him. He stuck, put his head down, and he didn't step out of bounds, Jim. They're going to review it, but he didn't step out of bounds.
61-yard touchdown strike to Stephon Diggs.
Jim Henderson's his name. He's a dud's dud. I've listened to Saints broadcast before. He brings nothing. Like
my
that.
God, I don't even know what happened if I'm listening to that.
Are you kidding me? Oh, no, I don't care. You're kidding me.
Touchdown on the final play of this game. Are you kidding me?
And that's nothing. Nothing at all.
I mean, it's one thing to lose on a Hail Mary. Like, on a Hail Mary, at least you can say, well, there's a fluky element
sure.
to it. Like, someone batted the ball, deflected, popped into someone's hands, and you're like, oh, my God, how can you lose on that? Hail Mary. This was just horrendous defense.
So is that about Diggs? Is that about Minnesota? Or is that about New Orleans?
New Orleans.
Not being able to close?
New Orleans. Who totally out, about New Orleans.
Who out there can play 60 real minutes of football in the playoffs? Who?
No, nobody.
Nobody.
One team.
No, but there's one team. There's one team that has some confluence of talent and being able to put 60 minutes together of quality clutch football. Only one team in the league is capable of doing that. There's plenty of other teams of talent. There's talent all over the place. No one else can put it together. But that, you said the play-by-play guy in New Orleans was Jim Henderson?
Yeah, yeah.
He sounds a little bit like our guy, Judd Surratt, doesn't he?
Marshall.
Except just with like half the excitement.
I guess in terms of tonality, a little bit.
He
yeah.
sounds just like Judd, but Judd Surratt lets you know when you win lose a game. Go ahead.
Marshawn will circle in front of his neck. Now he gets the signal. Look at him accelerate over the line, into the slot, forehand, shoots. He scores! Brad Marshawn able to whip one five-hole by Carey Price, and the Bruins cascade off the bench and celebrate a 4-3 shootout win here at the Bell Center.
Okay, I just wanted to play that. It did. Henderson does sound like Judd Surratt.
Yeah, they do sound alike.
But at least Judd gives you excitement. He
swallows the crap out of that mic when they score, man.
Holy crap, you have to scrape him off the ceiling for crying out loud.
Jim Henderson. Oh, well, the Saints have come back in this game, and now they're up two. Hopefully they can hang on.
I do love it when Marshawn whips one.
Brad Marshawn!
Marchand able to whip one five-hole by Carey Price.
Yeah, he whipped one five-hole.
Ernie and Franklin, go ahead, Ernie. What do you got?
Hey, so that call at the, I think the second quarter with the punt, the false start,
yep.
Like that whole mess, like that was embarrassing as a football fan, like a neutral football fan. Like, that was false start on New England, clear as day. But once the ref goes and have his little chit-chat with Belichick, he gets so intimidated by him that he says, you know what, no, we're going to switch this around. And this has been going on for years. You know, the officiating during New England Patriot games, it just seems like Belichick knows the rules better than the officials do. So that's why they always get the benefit of, like, the closer calls.
I'm sorry, Ernie. So the officiating is just for, like, you know, and Maz, I'm sure you're like me. Like, you know, I want the Pats to win, but I'm not approaching it like a fan. Like, I also want a competitive product.
I generally want them to stay out of the way. I mean,
No, but what I'm saying, I'm just trying to set up, like, I want competition.
Of course.
Right? So, you know, 32-10 doesn't do anything for me. I'm sorry. It just doesn't. So I'm not like a classic Patriots fan like that. So when the refereeing gets in the way, like, Tennessee's far enough away as it is, but then the officiating comes on top of it, like, that is so frustrating to me. It's like, Tennessee wanted to make it a game early. They wanted to. They were up 7-0. And then after you tied 7-7, they convert on third down to Eric Decker, and there comes a flag for an offensive pass interference call. That's just total nonsense. Total joke. And then you go up 14-7, but then Tennessee holds you, forcing your punt on the goal line, and they're trying to make this a game. Then the Patriots jump offside, so now they're really going to be penned in to their end zone, punting out of there. It's like, okay, I have a game. I have a reason to watch this. And the refs pick up the flag and then call on the other guys, give the Pats a first. Like, that is so frustrating for someone like me who wants a competitive game. And now it's not just that the opponent's outclassed, and I know I'm not going to get a game, but now the refs on top of it don't allow the opponent to even say in it if they want to.
I mean, how many times do you think you see that? Where not only you see them pick up the flag, how many times do you see them pick it up and reverse the call?
Oh, God.
How many times do you see them pick it up and say, oh, no, it wasn't procedure. Actually, it was on the other guys. Now that we think about it, we got it. You never see that. You see them pick it up. You never see them completely reverse the call. And just so that I'm consistent, I felt the same way about the officiating in the first half of the Minnesota-New Orleans game. I thought the Saints were getting screwed by the officiating in that game with the PI calls that were getting called over and over. Now, look, there were a couple of occasions in there but that Stephon Diggs was holding the corner's hand more than the other way around. It was Lattimore, I think, at the time, if I remember right. I thought the officiating in that game was embarrassing. Generally speaking, let him play.
Do you know what stood out there to me? And this, folks, you may get to witness firsthand. If the Vikings make it, and, you know, you're going to be there, but if the Vikings make it, the tool bag horn that Minnesota plays after
the
a good
gal
play.
Gal horn, I think, is what it is.
No, it's a Viking horn.
Yeah, I believe it's called a gal horn.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't understand what you said there. Gal horn?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know you're dealing with a bunch of a-hole tool bags when they blare that thing after a penalty. It's one thing when you make a good play, you score a touchdown, or you get a first down. Okay, fine. You know, everyone has their own little thing. When you start doing that for a flag, you, sir, are an a-hole. You, sir, are a bad person.
Tool.
You are a tool. Now we're in Montreal. This is just rooting for flags. And if you notice that in that first half, because New Orleans was flagged so many times, as soon as a flag hits the ground,
I got to try to simulate that.
That makes you a bad Little League parent. That makes you a bad person.
Well, it's been a lot of years of misery there.
No, but you don't.
Team.
Don't celebrate the flag. Especially now with the ticky-tack pass interference call, when they can drop that thing at a moment's notice. But, you know, so the guy's covered, bailout flag, play had no chance, but the idiot back judge throws a yellow flag. You a-holes. And you may get to experience them firsthand. Those Minneapolitans, whatever they call themselves?
Minnesotans.
Oh, my God. Sneaky bad people. Sneaky bad people. And that horn is the latest indication. You know, people equate, like, Green Bay people to Minnesota. Green Bay is not, when the flag hits the ground, we're not going, losers. Losers.
I thought the officiating in the first half of that game was an embarrassment.
How about the clock operator in Foxborough? How long does a second last?
About 3 seconds.
Did you see that thing with Amendola at the end of the first half? Now, that's on the officiating, too. That's not a hometown clock because that's a neutral official running the clock. But that thing had to, again, that took 3 seconds.
Yeah, I think Belichick was behind it. I think there's a little button or a plug or something where he can delay the clock or he freezes it so that it moves slow or something.
Murray, it's hopeless. You can talk up the Jags as much as you want.
And I will.
This is a moonwalk backwards to your 6th Super Bowl ring. I am sorry.
Tom Blake. Coughlin coming for that S.
Blake again. Portals.
Felger and Maz.
This is Felger.
The man is beholden to no one.
And Maz.
I don't really know what to expect.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I ain't got too much to say, but y'all make sure y'all bring that same energy out here next week and the week after. We going to the Super Bowl, and we going to win that bitch. We going to win that bitch. Duval!
But he's the one who was the most vocal after the game, throwing it back in Pittsburgh's face for overlooking the Jaguars. All the tweeting, Le'Veon Bell tweeting at 1 o'clock in the morning the night before the game about the rematch with New England.
Right. Second round, too, right?
So Jaylen Brown goes off on the Steelers after the game, as he should. Then he goes to a pep rally in Jacksonville and looks past the Patriots and says, we're going to the Super Bowl and we're going to win that pitch. Just after less than 24 hours after beating a team that got overconfident, was looking past their opponent. How do you like them apples?
Okay, so look, I'm not telling you I like it. I think it's stupid. But again, do you think... You think Pittsburgh lost the game because they talked?
I think it's symptomatic of a team that doesn't get it.
Yeah, I think they're poorly coached. That's what I think. I mean, how many times have you said over the years that a lot of teams yap and don't do it the way the Patriots do, and they still have some success?
Yeah, it feels like it's short term. But, I mean, I'm not treating it as a cause and effect. I'm telling you that it's a symptom of a team that doesn't get it.
I think their coaching sucks. I think their coaching sucks. That's what I think. I think they should blow out both coordinators and the head coach, but they never would.
I think it's the whole culture down there. It's the whole culture. It's the fans to the team and the team back to the fans, feeding off each other. Overhyped, overconfident. They do it every year. Happens all the time. And they've won, but think of how much more they would have won if they just kept their heads together.
How about if they had a coach?
But I mean, again, it's all part and parcel. Because the talent's been there throughout the years. If they just had a clue, think of how much more winning they would have done.
I mean, I would say there were a couple of years in there where they didn't have talent on defense. They had to overhaul their defense. It took a year or two in there to do it. But you know what? They don't game plan at all. They don't.
Oh, that defense is a joke, isn't it?
I mean, that thing yesterday, Blake Bortles throwing passes to guys over the middle of the field wide open on third down. Jacksonville went 8 for 14 on third down with Blake Bortles at quarterback. 8 for 14, and on one of them, they went for it on fourth down and got the touchdown when Leonard Fournette jumped into the end zone. So it's actually 9 for 15. So 60%, the Jacksonville Jaguars against the Pittsburgh Steelers on third down in Pittsburgh. That, to me, is horrendous coaching.
We got Tom and Quincy. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Mike. I had a comment about this Jalen Ramsey thing. Like, first of all, the kid he's going to be fantastic, but they have so much young talent on Jacksonville. Doesn't someone have to rein these kids in? Have they not learned about the whole predicting a win against the Patriots? And I don't understand how the coaching staff isn't like, you know, hey, dude, button it up.
So let me tell you, Tom, you know, there's a difference between doing what the Steelers did, which is overlooking an opponent as the favorite, right? Like, that's just showing disrespect. There's something about an underdog, a rank underdog, saying we're going to win. Like, that's not as bad. You know what I mean?
I mean, the Giants did it in 07, won the Super Bowl.
Right, so, like, actually...
The Steelers were coming from a place of obsession. They're obsessed with the Patriots. And even, you know, David DeCastro, one of the guys on their defense, called the rest of his teammates stupid.
Oh, great quote.
Which is great.
It was a great quote.
With the Jaguars, it's coming from a place of, you know, scrappy underdog. No one really believes in them. Like, I had no problem with what Ramsey said. They all been yapping since they won that game yesterday.
To me, it's bad form. And it's totally not going to matter because the gap in where they are as a program is... So, I mean, they can say whatever they want. They could say the right things or the wrong things. It's going to make no difference. But it's different when you're a prohibitive underdog and you say we're going to win versus a prohibitive favorite and look ahead to the next opponent. Those are just two different things anyway. But the Steelers thing with this obsession with the Patriots and just... But it's not just a Patriots thing. It's just what they do. They get ahead of themselves every year. David DeCastro, the guard, said... they were ready to go, meaning the Jaguars. They were mad. They were angry. They had something to prove, and they did it. Yeah, it's embarrassing. It really is, man. It just blows my mind. They beat us 39-9 in October. We played like crap, and we want to talk about New England? I just don't know what to say about that. It's just stupid. It's just not what you do. You don't need to give a team like that more bulletin board material. Great quote.
The coach started it.
And the coach not only let it happen, he set the tone.
That's why I keep coming back to that spot. It's the coach. It's the coach. The coach is the problem there.
Le'Veon Bell is tweeting. I'm doing the NBC Sports Boston postgame show with DJ Bean between 12:30 and 1 a.m.
This is when I got it too, yeah.
And DJ Bean is reading live tweets from Le'Veon Bell, meaning he's up at 1 o'clock in the morning the night before a 1 p.m. playoff game. Right? You got to be at the stadium at like 10 a.m. or something. So he's up on Twitter at 1 a.m. tweeting about the rematch with the Patriots less than 12 hours before the Jaguars game. And then, like, Patriots fans apparently tweet at Le'Veon Bell saying, Le'Veon, you still have a game tomorrow. And he starts going back and forth with Patriots fans.
And this is also about 48 hours following him saying, if you franchise tag me again, I might retire.
Complaining about his contract and about him sitting out next year if he doesn't get what he wants. Oh, God, that's so Pittsburgh.
They just don't get it.
It's so Pittsburgh. And they did the same stuff under Cowher. So they need a whole different change of mindset.
They just love those rah-rah, make-noise coaches who really don't ever approach a game as a real game. Like, they just, you know, we're going to come out and beat you up and scream and yell, and we're tougher and stronger than you, but they're never, ever smarter, ever.
Steve in Rhode Island on the coaching situation. Hi, Steve.
Hey, how you doing today, guys?
We're good. What do you got?
You kind of answered it already once on the show. I was thinking maybe that Tennessee Titans' job now has come up, that Josh McDaniels might, for some reason, I don't know, Marcus Mariota.
Let me ask you, Steve, if you're Josh McDaniels, would you rather coach Indy or Tennessee?
Oh, God, I think maybe Tennessee.
Okay, what do you guys think?
Tennessee. I think Tennessee because you have a better quarterback, or at least right now a more reliable quarterback in terms of health with Marcus Mariota. You have a GM that you will have some familiarity with in John Robinson, who used to be a scout with the Patriots. And I think a sneaky attractive part of the Tennessee job is it's less pressure. I think you could kind of, you know, not skate, but you could get away with a couple of 7-9 seasons there before you really feel the heat. Indy, you're dealing with a kook owner, a drug addict owner, Andrew Luck, who's one big question mark, who probably ruined by that team. And I think you'd deal with more heat there, too.
Yeah, how good's the ownership situation in Tennessee?
Yeah, it's a little unstable there, too. I think there's a family struggle, I think.
Yeah, so I look at it and say, I'll take the quarterback. I'll take the passer. I mean, it's part of the reason. I can't look at the Giants' job when we were discussing that and say, boy, that quarterback thing's a big problem. Like, what do you do now? You're going to inherit Eli? Are you going to compete with Eli? And then where do you go? To me, you got to have the quarterback. You got to have it.
Do you think Luck's okay?
Well, I don't think McDaniels would take the job unless he is. I mean, I think. Yeah. I don't know, Murray. I can't imagine that he would look at it and go interview and say, we'll worry about the quarterback later. I got to believe he looked at it and said, what's the status with the quarterback? So I just think Luck is a better pure passer than Mariota.
Without question. I just question whether or not he's actually ever going to be the same guy again.
So I'd rather have the Indy job.
Here's Willie in the car on the Jags. Hi, Willie.
Hey, guys. I'm actually still waiting on Antonio Brown's Facebook Live video from the locker room.
Exactly.
I'm wondering if that's going to happen anytime soon. The Jaguars' defense, are they that good giving up 42 points?
I don't think so. I think they're overrated. I don't think they suck. I think they're overrated. They're the number two that's scoring. Right. Yeah, they allow the second fewest points in the NFL over the course of the year. But in three of their last four games, two out of their last three, they allowed 44 to the Niners and Garoppolo and 42 yesterday. So, like, how is that a lot? You know, this ain't the Ravens from 2011, and this ain't the Jets from 2010. I don't think this reaches that caliber. I don't think anyone has a defense like that anymore. Never mind these guys.
I mean, it feels like he can beat him down the field. Again, it happened. Now, look, some of those were great plays. Antonio Brown made two terrific catches. And Facebook Live video aside, he was one of the best players on the field yesterday. After missing the time that he missed, I thought he was terrific. So, but then the Martavis Bryant play, the two touchdowns, it feels like he can beat him down the field. Which is why I wonder, like, this should be a game where Brandon Cooks could give the Patriots something, but I don't know. I'm not leaning on that one.
So, look, I'll spend all week with the rest of you making fun of Blake Bortles, who sucks. I'll make fun of anyone who wants to tell me that Leonard Fournette is going to come in here, Murray, and be a factor. Like, I'll laugh.
So was he not a factor yesterday before he got his
nope.
ankle hurt?
No, nope, pretty much a non-factor.
So you're a scoreboard guy. You look at the stat line where he runs for 110 yards and three touchdowns. That didn't matter. He wasn't a factor in that game.
No,
yesterday.
That sounds like a fantasy stat.
I don't care about
how
the
many
fantasy.
How many points you get for 100 yards and how many points you get for touchdowns.
No, let's not do the fantasy thing because it has nothing to do with it.
The question is how many.
Was he not a factor on those first few drives, especially the first one?
He ran well, but I think if they had Joe average running back, it would have been roughly the same. Roughly the same. I think the other kid's more dangerous. The other kid scares me more because he's more part of the passing game. Yeldon?
TJ Yeldon.
I'm purposely not going to remember his name. Because he's
I
a running back, and I don't care.
I'm
a running backist. So I don't even care what his name is. But he seems shiftier and quicker and more of a factor in the passing game. And so I think he's more of a factor. Leonard Fournette, make me laugh. So if you had Joe average running back in there, and Leonard Fournette scored 3 touchdowns and 100 yards, if you gave it to Joe average, I bet he would have had 90 of those yards and 2 of those touchdowns. One thing I will say Fournette does well is he dives over, you know, but give him the ball inside the 2. He pounds that thing in there. So he's good at pounding or jumping the line like Walter Payton. Like, he can do that thing. So I'll give him that. But that's how they're going to win? Like, you got to get down there first. I'm telling you, over under for his yards on Sunday, 28. Yards per carry, 2.7. He'll be under 2.7 yards a carry, under 28 yards for the game. The Pats are going to key on him in the first half, so he's going to do nothing. And then the Jags are going to be down 27 to start the third quarter, and they can't hand the ball off. So the guy's going to do nothing. It'll be a complete non-factor. Are you scared of Leonard Fournette, Maz?
Nope. I'm not scared. Look, I think yesterday was about the Jags' offensive line. I think they manhandled Pittsburgh at the line of scrimmage. I do. I think they manhandled them. They were able to just push him every single time. How many times did Bortles get sacked yesterday?
None.
Zip. Blake Bortles.
So this is what I'm saying. Give it to any running back there in front of that line, they would have had production.
I just think it was a line thing yesterday. I do.
And oh, by the way, I started questioning whether Fournette's a little bit of a Sally. He got hurt, comes back.
It was the same injury he had earlier this year.
But I don't know.
Oh, I think he's hurt, and I think that's going to help the Patriots further. That's another reason. I don't think he's right.
And then and then when he came back, the way he ran, I'm like, I don't know.
Well, because he had a hurt ankle. It's not going to look the same. It was the reoccurring injury he had from earlier this season.
Another thing breaking for the Patriots, by the way. The best offensive weapon they have just, you know, again, got hurt in the game before they played the Patriots.
Well, let me tell you, I think him being hurt will help the Jags not hurt him. If they're smart about it.
They're not.
Because if you come in trying to establish Leonard Fournette, you're begging to get beat 42-10, begging. So if Fournette's hurt, maybe that just, you know, forces them to throw the ball more, forces them to use the other kid more of a passing back, that sort of thing. That's the only shot they have. So I think Fournette being hurt actually helps them, doesn't hurt them.
They're not gonna throw it more because they're scared of their own quarterback. Again, what was that comment from Marone early in the year? Someone asked Doug, it might have been right before the season, what's the ideal number of passes that you think Bortles should throw per game? And Marone's answer was 0.
Well, they benched him in the preseason for Chad Henne.
The coach said he wants his quarterback throwing 0 passes. 0. Because he doesn't trust him. I don't care if it was before the season or not. They don't believe in him.
Step 3 of the quadruple bye, Murray.
We're getting a game. You'll see. We're getting a game.
You are fearful of the Jags.
Yeah, because of the defense and the Tom Coughlin factor. Tom Coughlin is old man Coughlin's looming over this game. Ah, coming for that ass again. Ah, you can't beat me. Ah, especially in the playoffs. Ah, I beat you twice before in the Super Bowl. Ah, ooh, Coughlin's coming. Ah.
You don't even believe that.
Tell you what.
No, I do.
I would love to see them put Ramsey on Gronk. Like that I would like to see. Ramsey's what, 6'1", 6'2"? But, you know, he's tough. Like, to me, it might be the only shot they have. Put Ramsey on Gronk.
I get that this team's a punchline, and it has been for years, really, since their inception. But I've been kind of sneaky fearful of them for a while now. I'm not shocked that they're coming in here. I wasn't shocked that they beat Pittsburgh.
Oh, no, I'm not shocked that the Pittsburgh Steelers choked. I mean, it's unbelievable that they did, but it's really not. But it's not about it's not about the Jags. It's really not.
Ah, helmet catch. Ah, Mario Manningham. Ooh.
42-10 is the final.
Felger and Maz.